Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. Inspiring stories that change lives. Where ordinary heroes tell their extraordinary stories of how they have triumphed over unexpected challenges. This is where we say what can't be said and use the AAA formula for freedom. Awareness, acceptance, and action. Now, here's your host, Hillary Burns.
Hi, this is Hillary Burns, and welcome. And today we are getting to use what we say, which is unexpected challenges with the sound. And we are here with Raven, who is a true hero. And you will learn all about Raven and how she has triumphed over so many things. I'm thrilled to have her here. And I just have to tell you that when I met Raven, we were doing some planning work, and her goal, it was a 90-day planning session. Her goal was to find a place to die, an inexpensive place to die. And so, you know, we worked with that. But the miraculous part of it, which you're going to hear in the second part of the show, is that Raven is no longer looking for a place to die. She is thriving. She is up to so many wonderful, amazing things. And I can't wait for her to tell you her story. So the beginning, Raven is going to introduce herself, and we're going to hear all about her prior life. And then the second half will be about how she's triumphed over what I told you before. So welcome, Raven.
Thank you so much for inviting me. This is so exciting. Let's start with my name, Raven. R-A-V as in Victor, E-N, like the bird. And I go by one name, and you'll know why in a second. My background is all theater, fashion, television. Theater, Broadway shows, TV specials, commercials, and then fashion, runway modeling between New York and Europe for another decade, and then came back to the States and started my own television show. And this was in the 80s, late 80s, when they were still calling it cable show. So I had my own cable show for 5 years. So what happened between the Broadway shows and the fashion modeling? I was coming back from a show in an old-fashioned car, had no headrests or anything. It was like sitting on your couch in your living room. In the fog, I'm driving. I was hit by an 18-wheeler that I got caught underneath the front of the truck. Then the whole truck went across 4 lanes of traffic, and we crashed into that cement barrier. So I had no head support at all. And I had been really hit twice, once from behind and once from the front. And they had to, the jaws of life thing to get us out of the car because it was it was smashed. It looked like it had gone and turned into a tiny little Volvo at that point, teeny weeny car. So anyway, I spent 2 years in physical therapy, and I'm just going to get to the fashion part. But I had to have a job. Now, the Broadway shows, TV specials, I was in Pippin, Bubbling Brown Sugar, Pippin with Bob Fosse, Bubbling Brown Sugar. I was in Seesaw, my very first show, and I was in Seesaw with Juan Carlo Esposito, who's a very well-known actor right now. He's got parts and everything. I'm saying, when does this guy ever sleep? He's awesome. And I was his teacher because he was a child, and I had just graduated Sarah Lawrence, and I had a teaching degree. And so they asked me if I would coach him because he had to have a teacher on the road. All right. So I'm coaching Juan Carlo Esposito. So we did the Broadway shows, 7 of those. Then the big major car accident. What am I going to do? I am going to lose 30 pounds and I can't dance anymore, but I can certainly walk. And I went to every agency in Manhattan. Now I'm a native New Yorker, 3 generations. New York was nothing special to me. It was where I grew up in Manhattan. But I was turned down by every agency in Manhattan. Now, this was during the 80s when they thought if they just had one model of African descent that was fine, or when Oprah was starting her show, they didn't even want another host. If Oprah's there, she's fine. So it was hard getting into all of this television at that point. But I really wanted to do it. And so that's the Broadway shows, TV specials, commercials, fashion modeling. I actually wrote a book, and we'll have a picture of the book for you. And it's called A Day in the Life of a Runway Model with Image and Fashion Tips from the Trade. And I have these cute little anecdotes about what happened in Germany and then what happened in Switzerland. And then in between, I tell you how to do skincare, etc. So we got the Broadway shows, TV specials, commercials. That's the first 10 years. Then the fashion modeling, that's the next 10 years. And I literally flew back and forth to Europe for 10 years.
Raven. Raven. I just want to get, because I'm stuck back in your accident. Was this all before your accident or was this after?
The fashion modeling came after the accident because at that point I couldn't do the Broadway shows anymore. I couldn't do the 12-hour days and the rehearsals and all of those things. I was literally 2 years of physical therapy just to walk again.
Well, but yeah, so but fashion modeling, were you walking down a runway?
Yes, runway modeling. Walking down the runway, and that's how I started out. But then after that, I started doing print. So it just kept going. But the fun part is that after all these years in Europe, then I come back to New York, and now the agencies are interested. Now they want me to work for them. But at that point, I wanted to go on to do television. So I went on and started my TV show, and it was called Image and Style. And I hosted that one for another 5 years. So That's my background. I forgot to tell you, though, that I was diagnosed with juvenile arthritis at the age of 8, which meant that I was in pain all the time. It was like a little old person. I had swelling. My mom took me to the doctor and he said, yeah, it's juvenile arthritis. But if she doesn't start moving, she won't be able to walk. She'll be in a wheelchair by the time she's a teenager. So my mom took me to my first dance class. And I'm a little fat, little pudgy person. And I go into this dance class and I just fall in love with dance. And so that's how I got into the dance and the Broadway shows. I think I've covered a bunch of this stuff. Did you want to ask me anything?
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Well, let's go back. You're eight. You go to a dance class. You love it. How did you go from, because there's a lot of little girls who love dance, they don't end up on Broadway. Like, how did that happen? How did you end up there?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, yes, I was prepared. I continued to take dance classes. And then I went to the Dalton School. It's a prep school, a Jewish prep school in Manhattan. I was the only person of color in an all Jewish school. Yeah.
So that was your high school?
That was high school.
Wow. Okay.
And took dance class.
Oh, and you were always from New York, so you didn't have to move to New York. You were already there. Okay.
Just jump on a train or a bus. I mean, I knew New York like a fan.
Okay. So Dalton School. Yep. From Dalton School. Then what?
More dancing. Oh. And I remember her name soon. It'll come to me. This awesome dance teacher who just encouraged me. And then I went to Sarah Lawrence, and I majored in dance, fine art, and romance languages. At that time, you could have a dual, you could graduate with two things, and I think I actually graduated with three. I loved Sarah Lawrence. I was out of the city. I was in the suburbs. It was all green grass and trees and beautiful old buildings. It was, once again, one of the only people of color in a huge class. I can't remember how many. I think it was just me again. Yeah. So that's how the dancing happened. I got out of Sarah Lawrence, went for my first teaching job. And then I auditioned for a Broadway show because it was in the newspaper. So I thought, oh, this would be fun. I've never done that before. So I went to we had a 5 and 10 store at that time. It was called 5 and 10. You could buy all kinds of things, little socks, little sandals, little whatever. I bought some sandals that would actually stay on my feet. I bought a pair of short shorts and some kind of top because I didn't know what I was supposed to wear, but I knew I was supposed to be dancing. And I went to the audition and darned if I didn't get that show. And that was the one with Juan Carlo Esposito. That was Seesaw with Ken Howard, Michelle Lee, and Juan Carlo Esposito. That was Seesaw. So I know my first audition.
That's incredible. That's incredible. So were you like in the chorus line? Was it like a chorus line? Is that what you?
In those days, once I got started, they didn't have a chorus per se. Everybody did everything. So I was understudying Pippin's mother, Fastrada. I was understudy to the lead. I would be, I'd go and swing and do some other parts. So they were like cutting back on, it was very expensive to mount a Broadway show. Mm. So all of us had to do everything. We had to act, sing, and dance. Because at any time we could be pulled in to go on to the lead. So that was, yeah.
So you can act and sing and dance. You can also sing? Wow.
And well, that's another thing. Oh my gosh. I had a great music teacher in Dalton, and Harold Axe. Oh my gosh. These names are coming back to me. Harold Axe. He was the choral conductor, and we actually went abroad to do a series of concerts in these beautiful old European churches. They were gorgeous. And I worked as a translator because I already spoke Spanish and French. So I was sort of their translator as well. And then I was going and I was singing and all these, and he was an excellent teacher. And didn't he move with me to Sarah Lawrence? So I had him in high school and then I had him in college again. So I had 8 years of music with this wonderful man. So that's how the music singing part came into play.
But that's
you taking notes.
I am taking notes because I want to remember all this. It's amazing. So, okay, a couple questions. I mean, sure. Most people don't have one interview or audition and get the part.
No.
They just don't.
No.
What do you attribute that to?
At the time, this seesaw was a very sort of what they called gritty, like a street kind of feeling to it. It wasn't going to be a ballet or a regular Guys and Dolls kind of thing. He wanted something that was gritty and more street. So all of these dancers showed up, but they were all ballerinas. So that he would give them some really funky move to do and the clap in the hands, and they would just do this ballet thing. But I was the one who was doing all the street dancing. And so that's how I got it.
Wow.
He needed somebody like me who could, I also had ballet and tap and all those other things, but that's not what he wanted for that audition. So I gave him what he wanted. He wanted people who are funky and street and moving and grooving and not ballerinas. Wow. So that's how I got that one.
That's cool. Okay. And the other question I have is, you know, a few times you've said you were the only person of color. How was that? How was that for you? Was that, just normal or did you feel awkward or what?
Luckily, I grew up in an integrated community. I grew up in East Harlem, and Little Italy was also kind of a part of East Harlem. So we would buy our, you know, cookies at the Italian store on the corner. We'd get ices from somebody else, the streetcar vendor guy. So I grew up in a multiracial atmosphere, and I was in Manhattan. So it's, and when you live in the city, you have people from all over the world that you run into every day. So if you don't speak a little Greek and a little Italian and maybe, you know, something else, you learn all this as you're growing up. So that's the New York experience. I didn't realize how awesome it was until I moved away from New York. And then I realized what one theater. Oh my God, where's the museum? Hours and hours away. This I grew up surrounded. But you know what, Hillary? Yes, I was prepared. Yes, I love what I do. But there is an element of luck. There is an element of what made me audition for that show on that day. Why did I do that? You know, what made me go to the 5 and 10 and buy some funny little shoes that wouldn't fall off my feet so I could dance? There's always an element of luck in there. Mm. And I have honestly been lucky, very lucky. And I'm grateful for it every day. Yeah. So yeah, prepare. You got to be prepared and you got to look for miracles too. I'm always looking for the next best thing that's going to happen. Because if you don't, the miracle pops and it just, by the time you figure out it's a miracle, it's passed you by. You have to be expecting them. So I was my New York thing. I expected every day I would go out and some awesome thing would happen. And I was surrounded by, during those times, the 60s, 70s, early 60s, 70s, there were a lot of people coming in from the suburbs and working with inner city children. So that also gave us exposure. So we had all of these people who really cared about us. But they were people that we didn't know particularly. They had lots of money and we didn't. But that's how I got my sense of fashion, looking at the way these ladies dressed when they came in to teach us reading or math or whatever, or take us. And that's how I saw my first Broadway show. Oh, sit down, sit down, sit down. You're rocking the boat. Oh, what is the name of that show? That they took me to my first Broadway show, and I saw those people dance, and I said, I can do that. I can do that.
Wow. So, all right. A couple more questions I have. Really, that's great. And I think it was meant to be, maybe not luck, but who knows? Okay. What happened to your juvenile arthritis? Did that go away?
Still have it. No. And that's another thing. I had to really be careful. If I wasn't on stage and I wasn't rehearsing, I was in the chiropractor's office or the steam room or a hot tub somewhere. So my life was truly divided in half. I was either dancing and moving or I was at the doctor's. But I wanted this so badly, and I kept it up for as long as I could. And then the car accident, that kiboshed it. That was like, oh, that's it. Last straw. Yeah.
Wow. All right. And then the other question, where were you raised? I mean, where was your home? What part of New York?
In East Harlem.
Oh, East Harlem. Okay. So
near Little Italy, 104th Street and East River Drive.
Wow. Okay. So isn't, now this might be a obnoxious question, but isn't Dalton like a private fancy school that's very expensive?
Absolutely. And now you got to go back to the 70s and the late 60s. Everybody was trying to integrate their school somehow to show that, oh, look how wonderful we are. We are integrated. So they would hire one person. So that was me. But wow. I also had the high scores as well. I finished high school in 3 years instead of 4. I wanted to get out, but mom wouldn't let me skip the grade. She said, no, you can't skip a grade. So then I finished college in 3 years instead of 4. Then I tried to get out again. She said, no, think of something, courses you would really like to take and stay there and just have a good time for that last year. I said, mom, but I've got a dual degree already. Why should I stay here? She said, nope, just stay one more year. And that's when I started dancing. I got a scholarship at Alvin Ailey, and that's an awesome black ballet. Oh gosh, Judith Jameson, African with ballet mixed in. Oh, gorgeous. So I got a scholarship there, and I took another language at Sarah Lawrence. So I commuted between Sarah Lawrence and Westchester and Manhattan for Alvin Ailey's dance studio, and I did that for a year. So I just commuted back and forth and took the courses that I wanted, and I danced for a year.
Wow. So Alvin,
I know, but
so when was that? That was after Sarah Lawrence?
I was still at Sarah Lawrence because that was my last year at Sarah Lawrence. And but my mom wouldn't let me get out. I said, mom, they can even give me my money back. I had already paid for that fourth year. I said, maybe they'll give me my, she said, no, just stay there. And she did that to me all the way through my schooling. She did that. She would make me stay that extra year, even though I graduated early all the way through. So if I had just done what I wanted to do, I would have been out of college in three. I would have been out of college by the time I was 20 or 19. I would have been out. Because I was like 3 years ahead of myself.
But you might not have had that audition. You might not have had that audition, right?
Their socialization that comes along with the aging process. You don't want to have a five-year-old, even if they're brilliant, you don't want to put them in a class with a 10-year-old. You need to have all those social skills. And right. The only way you learn them is to go from one grade to the next. or else you're lost. You know, why do you think that child actors have such a hard time acclimatizing to real life? You so often hear about the drug addicts and the this and the that, because they were forced to be adults. Nobody really paid much attention to their education as long as they made it on stage or in front of the camera. And then when they age out, they're not prepared. Nobody's prepared them for this next part. I'm talking about prep. My husband, who passed away, was in sports management. And he managed people like Andre Agassi, Moses Malone, and a couple of other people whose names I can't remember because I am the fashion person. He's the sports person. And why was I going there? Oh, yes. And my husband was very clear that he made sure his athletes had a second career before they aged out of whatever sport they were in. He had them starting on their second careers. Because as an athlete, you may have 10, 15 good years before your knees give out or whatever else happens. So I think that's what made me marry him. When I saw somebody who really cared about these athletes and cared about their finances and their lives after sports, that was my baby. So he passed away, and I went into retirement. He was sick for a long time.
Wait. Hold on. We're going to go to a commercial break in a second, but where in all of this did you get married?
Oh, that's another story. Okay, so I was in New York doing some show. This was like the late 70s. I had already done a couple of Broadway shows by then, early 80s. And he was on the road, and so was I. So he called me on the phone, and he asked me to marry him over the phone.
Wait, did you know him? Hold on. Had you met him already?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
okay. You don't know him to he's asking you to marry him. So where did you? Let's do that after the break. We're gonna take a quick break. Doug, are you ready? And then we'll come back.
Are you inspired? Are you living a life story you are proud to tell? Are you actively pursuing and creating the life of your dreams? If not, you really need Hillary's AAA program for freedom. Just visit gettingrealwithhillary.com and schedule time with Hillary today.
All right, we're back. So, all right, Raven, I want to get into that. I want to hear all of it. So where should we go? I want to hear like the end, how you changed in those 90 days, but just tell us real quickly how you met your husband, how long you were married, when he passed away, and when did you leave New York? Because that's where I met you when you were out.
I left New York, oh gosh, I can't even remember, late, 2004, we bought our house here. 2004, we moved to Florida because at that point he was very sick. He had some cancers and some other things, and he was like going downhill. And I felt like I couldn't really take care of him in a city. So he had already been to Amelia Island, which is where I am now in Florida, off the coast of Florida. I love it here. He'd already been here for tennis tournaments, etc. And he said, "There's a place in Florida I want you to see." Well, I fell in love with this place. Little old trains going down the main street, and it was beautiful. So how I met him was we were both at the same convention, a sports convention. I was producing a show for Nike. And I did a whole lot of producing in there, too. But we'll be here all day if I give you my whole life. I walked up to him. I saw him. Of course, and there were not that many people in the tennis. Okay, now we're in the tennis arena in the 80s, 90s. And so I saw this awesome looking man, a man gorgeous, beautiful dark skin and salt and pepper gray hair. Oh my God. So I just walked over to him, stuck out my hand, and introduced myself and said, "Hi, my name is Raven." And he was talking to some other gentleman at that point, and he didn't say a word. His mouth just fell open, and he didn't say anything. The guys who were with him said, "Oh, and his name is Bill." So they had you what his name was. And then after that, he kind of followed me everywhere I went. I said, you have to stop following me. I'm working here. You have to stop coming to my booth. Just go away. All right. He said, could I please I date you? Can I come? No. I said, I'm busy right now. And yeah. So he found my mother's phone number and called my mother up and gave her his resume over the phone. And he said, I am an awesome person. I have an excellent job. At that point, he was working for another tennis company with the big tennis rackets, those huge rackets, and can't remember the name.
Wilson?
Wilson, or
Dunlop?
No, even bigger. Bigger. Can't remember, but it'll come to me.
All right.
And he said, she won't talk to me. So then my mother calls me on the phone and she says, how come you won't talk to Bill Shelton? I said, Ma, how do you even know who this man is? She said, well, he called me on the phone. She said, and you know, this don't come along that often. She said, you need to tell him to go away for 2 weeks. And if you still don't want to talk to him in 2 weeks, all right, you know, but you know, you need a vacation. So I said, don't call me for 2 weeks. I need a vacation. He calls me back 2 weeks later and he says, I have an all-expense-paid trip to, I don't know, the Bahamas or someplace where they were doing a tennis tournament. Would you like to come with me? And I went, okay.
Wow.
And so I truly just traveling with him because I was still traveling at that point. I'm traveling. He's traveling. And that's how we ended up, you know, proposing over the phone and getting married in a lawyer's office after breakfast. We had breakfast. We got married. Everybody went back to work.
Wow.
I saved a bundle.
And how?
We bought a house.
And how long were you together before he passed away?
32 years.
Oh, wow.
Now, so this is the longest arranged marriage. Just truly, it was the two of them ganged up on me. It was an arranged marriage. 32 years. Yeah, my baby.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. All right. So, let's fast forward. You're down in Amelia Island. I don't know when it was that I met you. I don't know if it was only 8 or 9 months ago, but how did you get to that point?
Oh, so I brought him to Amelia Island so that we could, you know, be together while he was literally going downhill. I bought wheelchairs and ramps and, you know, made sure he was comfortable. That's how come I know so much about this aging process. I've already been a full-time caregiver. And we could walk on the beach or I would roll him along the boardwalk. And they gave him 2 years to live and he made it for seven.
Wow.
Seven. And there's something on the beach by the water. I don't know what it is. And of course, at that point, I couldn't really work because I was a full-time caregiver. And my mother was also diagnosed with cancer within months of my husband, but she was in New York. So I commuted back and forth from New York to Florida to take care of two people simultaneously with two sets of doctors, two sets of nurses, all the medications. So I had to quit my job at that. And also my producer got cancer. So the producer, and we had been doing the show for 5 years, and your producer turns into your best friend. He knows how you move. He knows what to tell you. He knows what works, what doesn't work. So you get to know your producer. He was diagnosed with cancer.
Oh.
So all the most important in my life, all three people were diagnosed simultaneously. So now, okay, everybody's gone. Everybody has passed away very comfortably because I took care of everybody. And I literally just fell apart. I was exhausted. I hadn't been taking care of myself. My husband had lots of doctor's appointments. I hadn't even been to a doctor. I forgot about the doctors. I was so busy taking care of him. So when you came on the scene, when you and I met, I everything had caught up to me. The arthritis had gotten worse. Then they gave me polyosteoarthritis. Then they said, you have fibromyalgia on top of that. And you got all this stuff going on. And literally, my body froze. I would go into rigor. And I couldn't move. And that's when you met me. I was in the bed, frozen, couldn't move. And at that point, and in pain. And you're not like you're frozen and you're comfortable. You are frozen and just rolling over hurts. Your body, if I had been younger, they would have called it stiff person syndrome. But because I'm not in that age group, they say, that I can't possibly have that, but I might have that. Everybody's new. New stuff's happening all the time. Who knows? So anyway, I have an appointment with Mayo Clinic, and they're going to pull it all together and help me figure this part out. But when you met me, I was ready to die. I said, if I'm stuck in this bed and I'm in serious pain, what is the point? What's the point? Nothing. There was nothing to look forward to other than to start building this house on my sister's property where I could put in the wheelchairs and the ramps and all of that stuff and just die comfortably. So a lot of things happened at that point. I rejoined Landmark Worldwide, awesome organization, and I had been with them since 79, but I had gotten out of touch because of everybody getting sick at the same time. And the head of the company, or one of the big wigs in there, also has some health issues. And she said to me, Raven, if all you are is the pain and the doctor's appointments, then that's all you are. You need to have something else in your life. By that point, I couldn't even sit up in a chair for more than 10 minutes because the pain was so bad. So I said, okay, I will start with sitting in a chair and making myself sit up for meals. Eat meals, you have to sit in a chair, and then I get back in the bed. And then I said, okay, after we got the back muscles stronger, I said, well, I love my art. I'm a mixed media artist. I love it. So I would go to my art table, which is a stand-up table, and do 5 minutes of art and then go back to my back to bed. But as time went on, I started getting stronger and stronger. Then I'd walk around the apartment, and I live in an apartment building. So then I go out in the hallway and walk up and down the hallway because I had to get stronger because this lady who had cancer was telling me that she had a full-time job and she was doing it, and it was making her excited. She loved what she did. So I don't even know how I got into that. That's when we met.
And yeah. So what got you motivated? You know, you're waiting to die and now you're doing 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. You're eating in the chair. What got you unstuck at that moment?
It was what this woman said to me. This woman has cancer, for crying out loud. I mean, she doesn't know if she's going to be here next week, next month. And she's telling me to get up, get out of bed, and start moving so you have something else in your life. So that was number one. Number two was starting to work with you. That was awesome. Just every, you're so, okay, you're, problems are not problems to you. Problems are solutions. Somehow there's a solution. I don't know. And by the time you finish, it's working. So working with you, that was number one. And then, of course, the lady with the cancer. And then number three was I hadn't been out of my house in, I don't know, months because I couldn't walk. But after standing up at the table and walking up and down the hallway, now I'm getting strong. And I got back in physical therapy, too, because I said, I got to get stronger. I went out my first day out of the house. See, this is where luck comes in. I bump into this woman who owns a company called $1,000 Startups Consortium. What a mouthful. $1,000 Startups Consortium. And they actually have grants to help businesses get started. Now, I've been this mixed media artist all my life, but I gave my art away because it was something that I loved. But now I said, you know, I really would like to have a studio and work with young people and communicate with them through art. I want to have a studio. So all of a sudden, the house that I was going to die in turned into a studio that I'm going to now invite teenagers into. And
wow.
That's that. And it's every time I get tired or I'm in pain, you know, I'm still in pain. I'm still seeing doctors. I use a cane. I'm still doing all that. I got the handicap sticker on my car. I am definitely handicapped, but I am busy and happy and doing all these things that I want to do. So those three things, the lady with the cancer, you, Hillary, and $1,000 Startups Consortium. And that was Landmark. That lady's from Landmark. I'm not going to mention her name. Okay. So did you have another question for me?
Wow. No, I mean, it just seems like the way you tell it, it just seems so easy.
But this is where luck comes in again. how is it on the first day out of bed? My girlfriend said, come with me. There's a grand opening somewhere. I said, no. And then I looked in the mirror and I said, Raven, you're going to be in pain whether you're in the house or you're out there. So just go. And I bumped into this woman who has this grant, who's given out grants. Here's the luck again. You see, right. So yes, I'm prepared, but there's something in this that's happening here. and I just take the luck for granted. If I want something, I meditate on it for a while and I start working on it for a while. I wanted a particular piece of luggage because I had toys and things I wanted to bring back to the States from Europe. They're so pretty, but I didn't have a bag for it. So I visualized the kind of bag I need, a duffel bag with wheels on the bottom that rolls. The first store I went into, in the window, was the duffel bag with the wheels on it that rolls. My girlfriend was with me. She said, can I do that too? Can I just, you know, decide something, have it just show up? I said, I can't tell you what it is, but this is, and I don't take this luck for granted. I'm very appreciative of it. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So let's say there's someone like you who is not feeling well and has kind of given up waiting to die. What would you say to them that would have them? Because, you know, for you, it's like, yeah, just did this. Like, I know it wasn't that easy because I remember when we were talking, some of the stuff was a struggle. But would I think, or this is what I'm going to say, that when you, let's say, started working with me, when you got in touch with the woman with cancer, you started talking, you got into dialogue, you got out of your head and out into the world. You started talking out loud and people heard you. And do you think that would make a difference for people? You know, maybe they don't feel like they want to talk, but do it anyway.
A huge difference, because even when I couldn't get out of the house, I could do conference calls with people on the phone. And I have a group that I've been talking to for the last 20 years, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and we talk for 30 hours. That's 30 minutes. That's it. On, off, 30 minutes, everybody. And we've been doing it for 20 years. I got out of my own head at that point. And other people, when I said, you know, I really would like to work on this art, my friends would encourage me because they had already gotten all this free art over the years. So they said, oh, yeah, you need to go on Etsy and whatever else there is out there. So your stuff is beautiful. So I think talking, I had to go to physical therapy. So there was a community there. I think being around people, being in touch with people, And positive people, not people who are going to drag you down and say, oh, no, you should just stay in bed. You're looking really bad today. No. People will say, oh, I like you. You know, that turban, that color looks so good on you. They find something positive to say about you. Those are the people you want to be around. So I had cut myself off from people. And I didn't even look like I used to look. And for somebody who's been in showbiz all their lives, you take big stock on what you look like. And I just look like a shriveled up old woman. And so I didn't even want people to see me. Mm-hmm. I stopped going out. But then I said, no, I'm going to have to go out. And it wasn't easy, because after I went out that first time and bumped into the lady with the grant, I didn't go out for a long time after that because I was exhausted. I mean, that took up every ounce of energy I had. But I kept in touch with you, the lady with the cancer. I kept in touch with these people and I kept going. So no, it wasn't easy. I don't mean to make it sound easy. Truly there were days when I just, and I still have days like that where I know I need to just take the whole day off, or whatever it is, I have to reschedule it, because if I go into overwhelm, then all of the physical problems start kicking in and the neck seizes up, and then the shoulders get tight, and then I'm stuck in the bed again with the stiff person syndrome. So I'm doing what I love to do, but I'm not doing it at that quick pace that I used to do when I was in my 40s and 50s. I'm 72. I'm not, you know, not that that's old, but I'm not going to be running marathons right now. But there's certain things I can do, and my art's one of them. And I had a show. I just had an art show on Saturday. Oh my gosh, people really get my art. They get the my art is it's called Car Kuje, Customized Art Collections and Journals. And I actually give the person a little survey. What's your sign? What are your likes, hobbies, what colors, what metals do you like? And I create a journal just for them that has all of them in the journal, their colors, their color, everything. And there's something about holding in your hand something that's you that makes a huge difference. And then people start writing in the journals. So there's lots of pages, blank pages, but there's also lots of art and affirmations, like not the Nike Just Do It thing, but if not today, when? My body is an amazing healing machine. I use that one a lot. My body is a miraculous healing machine. Just when I thought I couldn't walk another step. And like today, I'm going to take the rest of the day off. I do have to go vote. I got to go vote. But then after that, I'm not doing a thing until tomorrow when I have my interview at Mayo Clinic. So I used to be able to do 5 and 6 things in a day. Now, if I do one or none, it's good.
Wow. So it seems like you got into dialogue with positive people that supported you. You are doing what you love, which is the art. You know, like, how much you can do and then still take care of yourself. Right. And I think that's it. And then so a couple more questions. How would they find your art? Like, if somebody wants a personalized journal, how would they find you? How can they request it?
They could go to, and it's brand new. Well, oh boy, I'm going to give them my email address.
Okay.
So it's Raven Style, R-A-V as in Victor, E-N, S-T as in Tom, Y-L-E, 4-3-5-6-8 at gmail.com. So Raven Style, 4-3-5-6-8 at gmail.com.
All right. Awesome. And we could put that in the notes as well. And then you didn't tell us how you got the name Raven.
Oh, yes. Well, Raven is actually my name. So but I have to give you the whole heritage thing because I'm like,
that you don't have a last name, I mean.
Yeah.
That you only go by Raven. How did that happen?
Well, see, Raven is my last name. So I like my last name. So I just use my last name.
Oh, what was your first name? Can you tell us what your first name was?
No, I'm not going to tell you. No. Just Raven. Now, some people will call me Yoli, Y-O-L-I, but I just go by Raven.
Okay.
People who know me, well, nicknames maybe.
All right. So that was the last name. I see. Okay. All right. Because you had said there was a story. So I was trying to get the story, but all right.
My heritage is all mixed. So my great grandfather came over from Hawaii to work on the railroads in the whatever year that was, early turn of the century, to work on the railroads. And he married my great grandmother, who was Native American. So we had an Asian guy married to a Native American. They had my grandmother, who is now mixed heritage, who is with the shaman of her tribe. So she was like the doctor, the healer of her tribe. So that's my grandmother. And then my grandmother married, we don't know, because she was like a rolling stone. We're not really sure. And then, but then, let's see. So then they had my mom, who was part Native American and part Hispanic. And then my mom married my father, who was also Native American and Hispanic. So his last name was Raven. So we got the Ravens from that line.
Wow.
And that's how we got them. I know. Yeah.
So go ahead.
No, go ahead. Ask
questions. So this is my ignorance, but so when you said person of color, I think of an African American. You don't have any of that. So you refer to yourself. Yeah.
But there's so many of us that are people of color. There are people who are from Haiti, who are from the Bahamas. They're not African either. But I got to tell you this joke. So this guy comes in. He's from the Bahamas, and he goes over to when you have to, you have to check into the United States, whatever that is. Yeah, and
the Statue of
and
Liberty.
There's only like four. Say it again. So there's only four boxes. You could either be Caucasian, Hispanic, Native American, or something else. And the guy said, "But I'm not Native American. I'm not black. I'm not African American. Man, I'm from Haiti. I'm not African American." And the guy looked at me and said, "Do you want to get into this country? All right, put down African American." And see, and so all growing up, I never knew what box to check because it was only four boxes. There were never enough boxes. But there's lots of people like me because this is truly a melting pot. We're all mixed up in here with somebody else. So there's not, I don't know any true African American.
Right. I mean like black. I think of color, and again, my ignorance, as black, but it's not. If you're saying you're a person of color, you're Hispanic, Native American, Hawaiian, right?
Right. Asian.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you just, but the, yes.
So you just, taught me something huge, right?
Oh, goodness. And it didn't help that I went to all white schools. I went to Dalton. I went to Sarah Lawrence. I think my job on this planet, other than my art, spreading my art, because I love doing this, is to show people what a person of color looks like, how they speak, how they talk. I mean, we've been so ingrained with the horrible stereotypes on television of people of color being less than or being hoodlums.
All right, we have 30, Raven, I definitely want to hear more, but we have 30 seconds. So I just want to, thank you for your generosity, for triumphing over everything that you have, even, what we had to go, I'm crying, going through with the sound and everything. You're a hero. You're a true hero. And I'm just grateful for you being here. Anything you want to say in 10 seconds?
No. I just want to say thank you so much for allowing me to just sort of tell my life story. Somebody said I should write a book, so I just might have to do that.
I can help you with that. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Raven. Raven, Raven, Raven. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show. We hope you were entertained and inspired. Please subscribe to Hillary's newsletter. Go to gettingrealwithhillary.com for more freedom techniques and fantastic stories and links to other great stuff. Don't forget to tune in every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio TV. And let's get real. Let's get connected. Let's get inspired and create that life you love.